The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 329, recorded on October 21st, 2013. Welcome to the 329th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 162nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback. And it's been a while since we did a gaming flashback, actually.
It has been, and I'm very excited to see this one because I actually had a hand in producing this game.
Really? Well, yep. It's just been released on Steam along with its sequel. But anyways, before we get into that, what have you been playing?
I've been fighting a giant cast on my foot, so I haven't been really going anywhere, but I did manage to pick up Ni No Kuni for $20.
Oh.
So, I've been experiencing the wonder of Studio Ghibli's, designed video game, and, it's been lots of fun.
Okay. I've been playing Civ 5. As a matter of fact, I played a multiplayer game with Dan, and they actually...
How's he doing?
But the thing is that, you know, I certainly had an interesting game in which the game glitched out on me, which led me to having to deal with the Huns. And, you know, they screwed with me, and I sort of blacked out. And when I came to again, I was feeding Attila his own spleen. So...
I previously to Ni No Kuni, I had been playing Diablo 3, and I finally found out what the black mushroom is for. Uh-oh. And constructed the Staff of Herding and got to show my wife Whimsyville or Whimsydale or whatever, Whimsy, whatever it is. That was a trip.
You got to go through the unicorns and rainbows, huh?
Exploding purple unicorns, yes.
Yeah. So the other thing is I took advantage of the Humble Bundle. That was the Android Humble Bundle. So I got all these games on my Android, but they also are all on Steam too. So I've been playing a remarkable lot of Ticket to Ride on Steam. So when I don't know if you know what Ticket to Ride is, it's an adaptation of the board game. It's also on XBLA, but it's pretty fun. It's basically numbers and colors, basically. So anyways, we're going to move on to the gaming flashback. Take it away, Jordan.
Gaming flashback, The Seventh Guest. The Seventh Guest, produced by Trilobite and originally released by Virgin Games in 1993, is an interactive movie puzzle adventure game. It was one of the first computer video games to be released only on CD-ROM. The Seventh Guest is a horror story told from the unfolding perspective of the player as an amnesiac. The game received a great amount of press attention for making live-action video clips a core part of the gameplay, for its unprecedented amount of pre-rendered 3D graphics, and for its adult content. In addition, the game was very successful with over 2 million copies sold and is widely regarded as the killer app that accelerated the sales of CD-ROM drives. The Seventh Guest has subsequently been re-released on the App Store for various systems such as the Mac. Bill Gates called The Seventh Guest the new standard in interactive entertainment. The Seventh Guest was the brainchild of game developer. The Seventh Guest was the brainchild of game designer slash graphic artist Rob Landeros and a Virgin Mastertronics programmer Graham Devine. When the Landeros and Devine presented their idea for the game, they were promptly fired so that they could get started on their own company, Trilobite, dedicated solely to the development of this game. They originally intended to create the movements through the mansion using video. 3D graphics and animation were introduced to the title earlier in 91 when Robert Stein III joined the team. Graham Devine created the game's engine Groovy, which allowed continuous streaming of data from CD-ROM. The game is played by wandering through a mansion, solving logic puzzles, and watching videos that further the story. The main antagonist, Henry Stauff, is an ever-present menace, taunting the player with clues, mocking the player as they fail his puzzles. "We'll all be dead by the time you solve this," and expressing displeasure when the player succeeds. "Don't think you'll be so lucky next time." A moderately complex plot of manipulation and sin is gradually played out in flashback by actors through film clips as you progress between rooms, solving 21 puzzles of shifting nature and increasing difficulty. The first puzzles most players encounter is either one where players must select the right interconnected letters inside the lens of a telescope to form a coherent sentence, or a relatively simple cake puzzle where the player has to divide the cake evenly into six pieces, each containing the same number of decorations. Other puzzles include mazes, chess problems, logic deductions, Simon-style pattern matching, word manipulations, and even an extremely difficult game of Infection, similar to Reversi, that utilizes an AI and would later go on to make an encore appearance in the sequel. After each puzzle, the player is shown a video clip of part of the plot. If the hint book was consulted three times, the player does not get to view the clip. The hint book can be used for all but the final puzzle. The second disc of the CD-ROM included a second disc of the CD-ROM set included a very large single audio track playable on any regular CD player. In total, the track was almost half an hour long and introduced both the in-game music composed by already leading video game musician George the Fat Man Sanger and two live music recordings. The game, whose melody and various permutations and stylistic variations became the background music for most of the game, and as well as the theme for a piano puzzle, and whose lyrics were based on Stauff's twisted plot and Skeletons in My Closet, a jazzy tune the female lead voice Chris McKay, which was the ending credits theme. A few years later, Sanger independently released an album titled 7-Eleven, which was little over an hour long and contained all the music from The Seventh Guest, this time on separate tracks, as well as its sequel, The 11th Hour. The in-game music had conventions similar to the use of the leitmotif in Sergei Prosky's Peter and the Wolf, wherein each guest was assigned a musical theme, where Peter and the Wolf used instrumental changes for its characters. The Seventh Guest, conversely, used stylistic variations on the melody of Sanger's Prokofiev. The Game.
Huh? Prokofiev. Prokofiev.
Prokofiev. Yes. Sergei Prokofiev. Due to the success of The Seventh Guest, Trilobite released a sequel entitled The 11th Hour. The game's reception was initially mixed and did not sell as well as they initially expected. Plans for further sequels of the series were initiated but never completed due to the then demise of the company. Landorus attempted to create his own official third installment titled The Seventh Guest Part 3, The Collector, releasing a trailer for the game onto his official website, only for the trailer to disappear and no further information on the series being released. Ports of both The Seventh Guest and The 11th Hour were planned, with The Seventh Guest being ported over to the CDI console. Initial plans for The 11th Hour to be ported to 3DO eventually fell through. The game was also to be ported to the unreleased Super Nintendo CD peripheral. The Seventh Guest was ported to the iPhone and iPad in 2010. A standalone version of the microscope puzzle for the original version of the Seventh Guest was later released under the name The Seventh Guest Infection. The puzzle has been excluded from the game for technical reasons and features two versions of the puzzle, a somewhat updated version of the puzzle as well as an older version of the Infection game that can be unlocked by beating the main game. The Seventh Guest, along with The 11th Hour, are available on Good Old Games and Steam now.
I wonder how big the files are. They couldn't be that big.
Well, you know, it was a CD-ROM game. The Seventh Guest was the reason I bought a PC. Oh. I'm not kidding. I bought a PC to play The Seventh Guest.
Okay. I had I was a PC and Amiga gamer, so it's not like, you know. But you said you owned an Amiga, so you did own a PC, you know, a personal computer, that is, not MS-DOS.
I bought a DOS/Windows machine to play The Seventh Guest.
You believe I've never played either game?
Really?
Nope.
I 11th Hour was good. I don't think it was as good as Seventh Guest. I think really you should play Seventh Guest. It's a fantastic game. And
$10 on Steam, so.
And the original version came with a videotape.
Oh yeah.
I still have the videotape. In fact, I can imagine the videotape is no more than 8 feet from my current location.
Anyways.
In fact, I bet it's within headphone reach. And if I didn't have this giant purple cast on my foot, I bet I could fetch it for you.
You know what? This has nothing to do with anything, but you know, speaking of Steam, you know, I just pre-ordered Batman Arkham Origins.
Oh, nice.
And the thing is that it's preloading.
Hmm.
So it's just a few days away. Can't wait.
Alan, my son, did the same thing with the Battlefield 4 beta.
Oh.
And he was all ready to go, waiting for that switch to flip.
Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Xbox One and PlayStation 4 headsets compatibility issues, and this comes just from Mega Games. Sony revealed that PlayStation 3 headsets won't work for the PlayStation 4 chat on launch day, and that future firmware updates will enable only some of them. According to the company, support for chat using USB headsets will be added through a system update sometime in the future. On the other hand, Bluetooth-based headsets will never be supported, while headsets using digital optical connection will be able to play in-game audio from day one, with chat support to be enabled through a system update. The Xbox One also suffers from a similar situation, whereas no Xbox 360 headsets can be connected to its next-gen successor until Microsoft makes good on its promise to deliver an adapter for the new socket. Both Xbox One and PlayStation 4 will ship with an official headset in the box.
So, well, that's not as big a deal then. As long as they're giving away a headset that will work, that's fine.
Yeah. You know, there are some people who have these fancy $300 headsets. You know?
Oh, yeah. The Turtle Beach stuff. And
oh,
yeah,
God, Turtle
exactly.
Beach, no,
yeah.
Not that. Maybe Razer. But I think I know why now Microsoft decided to include a headset in the box after all. I mean, they had to know that, oh, wait, we don't have an adapter for our 360 headsets, so we better include a headset, or else people will really raise holy hell about it.
Well, and so the 360 headset plugged into the controller, the Xbox One controller looks mostly the same, but obviously there's some structural difference around the headset jack.
They turn the battery around so it's flatter.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
But you know, there's just something that worries me about both consoles, because it seems like, you know, for both companies have been, how long do you think these companies have been working on their next gen hardware? Like 3 years maybe by now?
Oh, easily. Yes. They'd have to be.
Well, why are they so unready for the launch 3 years later? It's like, and Microsoft, the reason why they're releasing on November 22nd, it's because it's the latest they can release it. Before you know, Black Friday happens.
Before Black Friday, yeah, exactly.
It just makes me nervous about both consoles. Like, there's going to be something horribly wrong with them in the launch.
I can understand it from Sony's perspective, because Sony has never really been about online. I mean, not to the extent Microsoft has been, right?
Well, they're trying to be this time around.
They're trying to be this time around, but they never have been in the past. Microsoft, though, I mean, ever since Xbox Live launched, has all been about online play and microphones and so on and so forth. So it does seem to be a little bit of a slip on their part. But like I say, putting a working headset in the box is acceptable to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It just everything about the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 giving me the willies. I mean, if either system has some sort of flaw that requires people to start returning their consoles back, like the Xbox 360 did, that could be a complete and utter disaster for that company.
Well, and the other piece that isn't in our news but was breaking news after the last podcast was that some major games are being delayed until next year.
Right.
Watch Dogs is being delayed, and The Crew is being delayed as well.
And also Drive Club. But, you know, I mean, of all those, I don't think anybody is brokenhearted about The Crew being delayed. It was going to be a 2014 game anyway.
Everybody,
it wasn't a launch title.
Yeah, everybody was looking forward to Watch Dogs.
Yes. But on the other hand, I'm wondering if Watch Dogs is being delayed because of the current gen console version.
Or the Wii U version. But it would seem strange to me to delay the next gen launch. Simply because of previous gen.
How many people will be owning the next gen console, and how many people are going to be owning a current gen console?
Well, there's lots more people owning the current gen console,
right.
But if the next gen version is done and the current gen is not, then go ahead and launch the next gen version and then release the current gen next year.
That makes no sense, because people want to be able to upgrade from their current gen to the next gen.
That's true. The whole upgrade procedure is going to be lost.
And the thing is that, you know, it's not such a big loss for next gen, really. I mean, Watch Dogs wasn't going to make or break. It wasn't going to make someone decide which console. It's a multi-platform title. And,
right. You
know, there's a lot of overstress about the launch. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a million units released for each console's launch anyway. It's not like all of a sudden there's going to be 30 million next gen users. It's going to be like,
no, there isn't a single title at launch, even big ones like Halo, that are sold one-to-one with the hardware. The only ones that sell one-to-one with the hardware are the ones that are packed in.
One-to-one.
Yeah, Halo was very close to one-to-one.
Yeah.
But even Halo didn't sell one-to-one with the original Xbox. Yeah, so, you know...
That makes me wonder what people bought an Xbox but didn't get Halo.
I have no freaking clue.
How could you buy a launch Xbox and not have Halo?
I agree.
You know? Or maybe it's afterward. Maybe people months later, there are other games that were out there. Well, not even that.
I think it was probably people buying the console to resell it. They weren't buying any games.
Or maybe they were buying it for someone else.
That could be too.
But, yeah, I mean, there's still some pretty good launch titles that I want. How about you? I mean, are there any launch titles?
Well, I had planned on picking up Assassin's Creed 4 for a second title. I'm kind of at a loss now. I'm maybe Knack. I don't know. I want to play Knack and a demo station
Knack
first.
It strikes me as a PSN title, though.
It actually, you know, the demo videos and stuff I've seen have actually been pretty impressive. It reminds me of a simpler kind of game. I think you and I have mentioned a similarity to Cameo, which was a Xbox 360 launch title. We'll see how it turns out.
I hate to be a stereotype in this, but you know, everything I've seen of it has heightened my interest in it. But I might actually get Madden as a launch title.
Really?
Yeah, because the next gen versions, you know, they're really sprucing up the AI, or so they claim, you know. And that to me is more important than graphics and animations. I mean, if the players act more realistic, then I'm more interested.
I've never really been interested in football, either video game football or real life football. So
yeah, but you see, the thing is that I haven't purchased a Madden since 2008, and that was the PC version. That was the last PC version they released for it.
I haven't purchased a football game since, what was that original PlayStation football game? I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to look it up.
But yeah, I mean, I have Dead Rising 3. That's definitely on my watch list there. And there was another game for the Xbox One that I was interested in getting as well. It wasn't Watch Dogs, it was something else. But I'm not getting Assassin's Creed 4. I haven't even finished the first chapter of 3 yet, you know. I'm just so burned out on that series. I mean, I might just go play the first one over again.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, even 2, it just got too easy on 2, you know, and at least 1 had some modicum of difficulty. When
I wasn't quite sure what to expect from the new Assassin's Creed until I saw the whole underwater level, which I find fascinating. That you can swim around underwater, that there are air barrels and all of that.
To me, underwaters are the drum solos of video games.
Well, you will go from Assassin's Creed 1, where touching water kills you instantly, to being able to swim in the other games, and now you'll actually be swimming underwater, which I find fascinating.
You don't die in Assassin's Creed. You just forget. Desmond dies in Assassin's Creed, but I mean, Altair and all those other people, they don't die. He just remembers it differently.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. This is you, Jordan.
I'm sorry, I got distracted looking for that football game for the PlayStation that I can't remember what the name of it was. But yeah, the last football game that I bought. Dark Matter abrupt ending blamed on failed Kickstarter drive from Kotaku. Gamers who played the sci-fi Metroidvania-style game Dark Matter were shocked when the game ended with a black title card describing the ending. An alleged member of the indie developer Interwave blamed the failed Kickstarter drive for it. According to Viper on the official boards, the full story is indeed not complete yet because originally we wanted a longer game, 12 to 16 hours, but couldn't finish it completely due to time and money and Kickstarter failing. The Kickstarter fundraising for Dark Matter only raised about 12% of the 50,000 British pound goal this summer. Interwave had to choose between abandoning the half-finished ambitious game or releasing what they could to bring about something, bring something out to the world and show everyone the world of Dark Matter. Good Old Games has offered players a refund for the game.
You know, I really can't blame them, because either you release it and it wasn't half finished in terms of, you know, buggy, It was just half finished in terms of Halo 2, you know, in which you have the cliffhanger, right?
Right.
There's supposed to be another chapter. So either you finish the game or you release the game or you put it away someplace and never see it again. And it probably dies because the engine becomes dated, you know, and it sort of becomes an artifact that you can't really do anything with. So I can't blame them for
What's wrong with releasing it as episodic content?
Well, if somebody they could have said Dark Matter Part 1. The thing that I wonder is why not release it as Steam Early Access?
Right.
You know, because then you get to, well, it's a beta, you know, and people fund the game that way. They pay the money for it, you know, and they're understanding that it's not quite finished yet and their appetites are whetted. I just, you know, and from what I can see, it's not a bad game. You know, so it's a little short, you know, and but you didn't, it wasn't like you paid $50 for it, you know. So
well, how much was it?
I think it was $15.
$15 isn't bad, but you know, if they're going to do something like that, they need to advertise that up front and be honest about it. Don't have it come as a surprise to people who paid money for
your
game.
But the thing is that they didn't promise anything anybody. This is not a Kickstarter project, you know. It's not like they promised on Kickstarter certain things. No, this is a released game. And if it just ends with a wall of text, well, that's the way it ends. You know, I know a lot of games that used to end like that. Of course, they were back when there were no full motion videos or cutscenes or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just an ending. You know, maybe end suddenly. But I have to wonder if these people, you know, I mean, were they enjoying themselves before that came up? You know, that's what I want to know. If they were enjoying the game,
that's a good question. Did they consider the game, you know, actually finished while they were playing it? Did it have the appearance of a polished and complete experience? You know,
let's not even go with polish. Just say, did you have fun playing it?
Right.
And could it? I find it hard to believe that all the fun you were having playing it could be ruined by a black screen with some text on it. I cannot believe that, you know. I mean, you could be frustrated. I mean, but no one would say that Halo 2 was a bad game, for instance. You know, when
that's true.
You know, just boss fight, it ends, and we'll see you next time. Wait for 3 in a couple of years, you know. So,
well, I think it depends on how they phrased it too. You know, if they give an accurate description of the ending of the game, or if they just say, "Sorry, guys, we ran out of money."
No, it was basically a description of what happened.
Oh, okay.
And I can tell you exactly what it said. It's 1:30 here, so that's when Strategy Informer decides to have a 502. It's like I don't know why it does that.
System maintenance.
No, well, I guess. But you know what? People are getting their refunds, and you know, it's sort of like getting a free game. You get to play the entire game, and then I don't get it. But you know, like I said, you were complaining about Steam Early Access before. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were debating Steam Early Access. This is the perfect time to use Steam Early Access.
I don't know that I was upset. I don't use Steam, so why would I be upset over something like that?
Oh. By the way, from what I understand, Goddess is coming along, so I'm going to have to check in on it, which is Peter Molyneux's remake of Populous.
Mm-hmm.
And I backed it on Kickstarter, so I have access to the beta. And one of the things I found out that I did not know from the Kickstarter thing is that he's actually intending it to go through time from Stone Age to Modern Age. And I'm thinking, wow, this game is going to be in beta for a very long time. I don't see. I mean, it's really ambitious to try and do something like that. I mean, they try to with Spore, and they're only moderately successful.
I finally found the name of that game that was bugging me. It's NFL Game Day.
Oh yeah, I had the ESPN licensed game
from
that I reviewed actually.
96. Wow, 1996 was the last football game I ever bought.
Okay, so we're gonna move on to the next item. Rockstar New England working on, quote, next version of famous IP, unquote. And this comes from GameSpot. Rockstar New England senior graphic engineer Darren Feinstein has revealed on his LinkedIn resume that he's, quote, unquote, working on the next version of a famous IP. No other information has been given, but considering the teasing by Rockstar about a new Bully game, it's probable that gamers will be seeing Jimmy Hopkins again at Bullworth Academy. Bully originally launched on the PlayStation 2, but made its way to PC, Xbox 360, and Wii as the Scholarship Edition.
They said famous IP, so that kind of leaves out Bully.
No. You know how they...
Just giving you a hard time. You enjoy your Bully.
They, for one thing, there's always a lot of hyperbole on LinkedIn resumes or any resumes whatsoever. I'm surprised he didn't say he worked on Red Dead Redemption by himself.
Right, right.
You know?
Now, I would actually like to see a sequel to Red Dead Redemption.
Well, did you play Undead, the Undead expansion?
I did play the Undead expansion. That was lots of fun.
Yeah. Oh, boy. John Marston cannot catch a break in either version.
He just can't. No.
But
it's
anyway.
Going to end poorly for him regardless.
Well, actually, it ends better for him in the Undead game, though.
Yeah.
In a matter of speaking. But the thing is that, I mean, what else could it be? They can't be doing Red Dead Redemption because that's too soon. You know, they wouldn't be saying we're making a famous IP, because if it was Red Dead Redemption 2, you know, they'd just be saying Red Dead Redemption 2.
Right, right. And it can't be L.A. Noire, since nobody really bought an L.A. Noire.
Bondi is gone, so no.
Yeah.
And it can't, of course, be Grand Theft Auto, you know.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto just came out.
And there's no way in hell it's going to be that Riot game.
Oh, that was terrible. I had forgotten that. I had blanked that from my memory.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, Paul, for those who know, Paul is really anxiously awaiting Bully 2.
I think a lot of people are awaiting Bully 2. It could be interesting to have that happen.
And in a similar note, by the way, BioWare keeps on teasing Jade Empire 2.
The question is, whatever game this is it going to be out for current gen or next gen or both, or what are they doing?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be next gen, because the Bully 2 has been rumored for years now. Right. And not rumors that are sort of like, I had the word on my tip of my tongue. You know, that these rumors have come from a place, that, you know, these rumors are very not stable.
Continual.
No. The word I'm looking for, these rumors have had some basis in fact, right? It's not been conjecture. There's actually been hard evidence that Bully has been worked on, you know.
I hope if they do it, that they, you know, given that the new machines aren't going to be backwards compatible, I hope they have a refreshed version of the original for folks, who have not played the original.
The Bully 2 might take place in college.
Well, the first one was in high school, yeah. So yeah.
I mean, if you're following Jimmy Hopkins, I mean, you know, it's like...
That's true. It could be a completely different character. We don't know.
On a side note, by the way, the trademark for Alien Isolation was registered by 20th Century Fox as a video game.
Hmm.
And you'd think that Aliens Colonial Marines might have killed the video game franchise, but back in March 2012, Creative Assembly is working on it, which is really strange because Creative Assembly does Total War. Now, they do these real-time strategy games, so it'll be interesting to see if this is a real-time strategy game too.
An Aliens real-time strategy game. Ooh. Now you get to place your turrets and stuff.
Okay, but the thing is that they've been looking for
Aliens tower defense game.
I think they already had something like that, actually. They did have an RTS that was based on the Alien franchise, though, a while ago. I'm trying to remember what it was, but they did have an Alien RTS. Hmm. So. Oh, that's right. Aliens versus Predator Extinction. That was the name of the game. That was an RTS. So, one of the weirder concepts out there, but you know. So we're going to move on to the next item, and this one is really interesting.
I kind of like this one. Fassbender on Assassin's Creed film. It's definitely happening. This comes to us from Polygon. Prometheus star Michael Fassbender states that the Assassin's Creed film, which he is tabbed to play the lead Altair, is definitely happening. In an interview with Daily Beast, Fassbender enthused, "That's definitely happening. We're just developing the script at the moment. I've heard of it, but I've never played the game. I don't have a video game player. That's not what they're called. I met up with the guys from Ubisoft, and they told me the story behind it, and I thought it was very interesting, the idea of reliving memories." Fassbender was tabbed to play the lead by Ubisoft back in July of 2012. He was the publisher's first choice.
Yeah. I mean, people are just... And being introduced to Michael Fassbender, I mean, Prometheus really highlighted his acting skills.
He was fantastic in Prometheus, but he was actually a fairly minor role for him. I mean, I thought he was much better as Magneto in X-Men First Class.
Oh, you have to bring up that movie.
X-Men First Class was fantastic.
I don't think so.
I loved it.
But
the bit with him in the beginning with the Nazis, that was great.
Anyways, are you looking forward to an Assassin's Creed movie?
I think it could be interesting. I don't know if you've seen any of the Assassin's Creed short films that have already been done.
I saw those. Yeah.
It could be interesting. I would be interested in seeing more of Altair's story. You know, everything moved away from Altair fairly quickly, and so we don't really know a lot about him. I mean, he was in the first Assassin's Creed. He was in the PSP game, which nobody except me ever played. But we don't know much about him other than what we saw in flashbacks and stuff like that from the other games.
Now, the thing about this is that one thing about Assassin's Creed, it's very cinematic. It's a lot more cinematic than, say, Prince of Persia or Tomb Raider or Doom. You know, there's actual...
Right. There's a whole story there, exactly. And for people who have not played the game, assuming they do the script correctly, they will not come away from it feeling that they missed something or that they didn't know what was going on because they didn't play the game.
Yeah, so by saying him reliving memories, it seems like there's also going to be a Desmond there too. I wonder who'd play Desmond then.
I wonder if he might play both.
No, because Desmond, well, is Desmond going to be blonde too?
I don't know.
I don't think Altair is not blonde, though.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, Altair is more Middle Eastern.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to think of him as blonde because he's always wearing that white outfit.
Right.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how much of the story of the first Assassin's Creed there are. I mean, there are certain elements you have to have. You have to have Lucy. You have to have Abstergo. You have to have that, I forgot the older guy. Who's captured Desmond.
The guy that's on the side of the Templars, yeah.
Yeah. So the good thing about the Assassin's Creed is that it's a lot easier to do action that is in Assassin's Creed, you know, the sword fighting and the assassinations and all that, than it is, say, to do something like Prince of Persia, in which a lot of the game is you jumping around. You know, you don't do much fighting. Most of it is wall running. And, you know, that's not very cinematic in terms of a movie.
It's cinematic in terms of a set piece in a movie, but not to carry an entire movie.
I mean, you know, what Altair does is he stalks, he listens, he plans, he gets into sword fights, and he assassinates. You know, and those deaths in which he's talking to the dead person... I mean, a lot of people did not like them, but I enjoyed it, actually.
It was a little silly that you stab a guy to death and he has time for a soliloquy before he dies. But, you know, that's a stage trope from a long way back.
Yeah, but, you know, I actually enjoyed it because, you know, it let you know a little bit more. Because when you're watching when you're getting information about your mark in the first Assassin's Creed, have you noticed? They always seem like the worst people in the world.
Yes.
And there's nothing good about them until you kill them, and then you find out there's a lot more going on than you think.
Yes, you didn't know the truth.
Okay.
I saved orphans.
But you know what? But what I do like is that Altair basically, you know, absolves them of all their sins after he kills them, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, so does Ezio.
Ezio.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
In the early things, he's just saying, "Fuck you, you're dead. I don't want to see you ever again."
Yeah.
Then he starts getting a little more, you know. Anyways, it'd be, you know, let us know.
If you were really that good, you shouldn't have been an asshole the entire time I was watching you.
Anyways, it'd be interesting to hear from the listeners who they'd like to see co-starring with Michael Fassbender in this film.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of fan casting on that, like the way you do some other games.
You know what? You know what would be good as the Templar Chief? Sort of, you know, It sounds strange, but it actually might work, is having Morgan Freeman play him. Morgan Freeman playing this evil character. Because, you know, it's been a while since he played an evil character.
He's getting up there, though. You know, have you seen the clips from that film that's set in Vegas? He's looking a little old now.
That's fine. This is not a role in which he's going to be leaping around like an assassin.
I just enjoyed the commercials watching a drunk Morgan Freeman. That just amused me to no end. I just
see him play an evil character like that.
Yeah.
You know, he's been too saintly in the past year.
He did that in Wanted. If you the end of Wanted Wanted itself is not a particularly good film, but it's worth it to get to the very end and hear Morgan Freeman swearing like a sailor. It's absolutely that part alone is worth it.
Seen his first Oscar nomination with Street Smart, the film with Christopher Reeve.
Oh. I haven't seen that.
You should.
I still remember him fondly as Easy Reader on Electric Company.
Street Smart was back in 86.
Mm.
So you should try that out. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Struggling scrolls may go free to play. And this comes to us from Escapist Magazine. Mojang co-founder Marcus Persson intensely dislikes free to play games, but collectible digital card game scrolls may have to do so thanks to flagging sales. Persson wrote on free-to-play almost 2 years ago to today on his blog, "The reason anyone switches to free-to-play is to make more money. You get your players hooked on your game, then you try to monetize them. The idea is to find a model where there's basically no cap on how much the player can spend, then try to encourage players to spend more and more money. Various psychological traps like abusing the sense of sunk costs get exploited, and eventually you end up with a game that's designed more like a slot machine than Half-Life 2. According to co-founder Jacob Parser, however, scrolls may just have to do. According to co-founder Jacob Parser, however, scrolls may have to do just that. We never want to make a game that sells a lot of expensive things just because there are people who are willing to buy them, Parser stated in an interview. However, we do not close the door on for making scrolls a free game in the future if needed to attract more players. Scrolls sold 110,000 units in its first month of release, but almost no new sales since." So, yeah, I mean, this is an interesting, you know, discussion on when you say, oh, boy, we have to go free to play. Hello?
Sorry, I realized my microphone was muted. I find it fascinating that how he dislikes free to play.
The name of his blog post, by the way, is "Why I Hate Free to Play."
He's not shy about it. Yeah. You have to do whatever is in the best interest of the success of the game. And if flipping over to free to play does that, then you do that. I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny because Scrolls was supposed to be, you know, remember, Scrolls was the game that was sued by Bethesda because
of the word scrolls in the title, right?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a bad sign, you know. The 110,000 units were basically everybody who was interested in the game, and no one else was interested in the game,
right? And all of the press they got from the suit over the name didn't seem to help them.
No, they should have released it right then.
Yeah,
I mean, the publicity had faded, you know, after a while,
right?
And the thing is, I watched gameplay and I was befuddled about what was going on in the game, and that's not a good sign when you know, it's sort of, you know, this is a strategy card game. It should be like Magic. You should know exactly what's going on and no hidden tricks, you know, or no gameplay mechanics that are obscure. I don't know. It was a great idea, but actually, that reminds me, Sony Online Entertainment is shutting down Magic the Gathering Tactics. So, and you know, the thing that struck me about that shutdown was that they wrote in their blog very specifically that, no, we're not going to let you run your own servers. Don't even ask about it. We just want to shut it down. And no, it's ours. You can't have it. And it just turned me off a little bit. I mean, why not? You're not making any money off it. You know, what is the harm in letting people run their own servers?
That's a very good question. The other interesting thing is, I don't know if you've been following the Google Fiber news. Google Fiber has announced that you can now run your own servers. If you're lucky enough to live in, one of the two cities that has Google Fiber, they will allow you to run your own servers over the fiber connection.
Oh, it's really sad, by the way. Amazon took down their lockers around New York, which was a pity because the great thing about the Amazon lockers was basically Amazon sends the item to the lockers and you pick them up from the lockers.
Yeah, I heard that they were shutting those down.
Yeah, and the locker was a block away from me in Gristides. And I found out about it because I was going to have my Xbox One shipped to it. And then I got an email from Amazon saying, this address no longer exists. You have to give us a new address. And I was like, oh, ouch. Damn. And the thing is that, the best thing is I didn't have to be home, see. And P.O. boxes cost way too much.
Well, and a lot of delivery that they won't send to a P.O. box.
No. But the thing – well, they
will. If something requires a signature, they will not deliver to a P.O. box.
But I just wanted – it was such a perfect thing. Now I just have to sit and wait. And maybe the UPS person will be lazy and they'll claim that I wasn't home when I was and I'll have to go to UPS and pick up the damn thing.
That does happen, yes.
So it's just – sucks that I just can't have it sitting in an Amazon locker waiting for me. And the thing is, people, when I told them about it, I said, oh, they're closing it down, they were like, what? Wait, that's an option? So a little hint, Amazon, something I like to call advertising. If more people knew about it, maybe it wouldn't have failed.
Maybe.
I think someone else should try it and make Amazon look bad. Oh, look, it's working.
Well, if Amazon couldn't do it, who could possibly do it? Google, maybe.
Other things. Sears.
Yeah. What you could do is if there's something like a mailboxes, et cetera, or, right next to me, I have a UPS store and FedEx bought Kinko's. So there's lots of FedEx stores. You could have it delivered.
You're saying that like it's news.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that there are other options than an Amazon Dropbox. If you're concerned in living in New York,
it isn't an option though on Amazon. It asks you for an address. One of them would have been my Tagus locker.
Right, right.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to reader feedback. Take it away, Jordan.
Listener feedback from Brian. I think I just vomited in my mouth a little bit and then almost had that vomit leave my mouth from laughing so hard. Also, I really need to do some more catching up on the Venture Brothers. This is in reference to our comment about the Rusty Venture, I think.
Yeah. By the way, I had Jordan listen, watch it right after the show, the uncensored version.
Yes, I did watch the uncensored version and then I made Alan watch it as well. Very funny stuff.
Yeah.
His comment on God mode, which was our question of the week, do you use God mode? Yeah. Typically a carryover from the days when developers would build tools into their games to facilitate testing and debugging. Nowadays, most developers disable access to those tools before shipping a game, but removing them entirely is typically inefficient and may unintentionally break a game. Fun fact, the first movie tie-in Spider-Man game for the PS2 had a cheat to actually bring up a panel showing debug information while playing.
Yeah, well, a lot of them had that. Have that.
I think a lot of them have done different things like that. Yeah.
Anyways, in keeping with the seventh guest, the question of the week is, what was your favorite adventure game?
Well, Seventh Guest wasn't really an adventure game. Seventh Guest was a collection of puzzles. It would be classified as a puzzle game.
It's classified as an adventure game, just with a lot of puzzles in it. I mean, look.
There's no adventuring.
Professor Layton's considered an adventure game.
Really, I would consider Professor Layton a puzzle game as well.
Does it have a story? Does it have a plot line that you have to follow?
Not really. No, I mean, there is kind of, but it's just an excuse to have a whole bunch of puzzles in one place.
Yeah, most adventure games are like that.
I guess it depends on how do you classify an adventure game? Well, what do you consider to be an adventure game?
What was your favorite adventure game?
I have no idea. I've played so many games over the last 35 years that I couldn't even begin to guess what the category is.
I have mine. I mean, it's right off the it's not even a question for me.
I would consider any game that has more exploration than action to be an adventure game. So I would put you know, the Prince of Persia as an adventure
game. That's not an adventure game. Stop. No.
That's how I would classify it.
No. Absolutely not. That is not an adventure game.
That's why I say we have to define the term.
Okay. But an adventure game is basically, you know, it's just.
Are you thinking solely of like the point and click mouse based?
Who said it had to be
games?
Point and click? I mean, well, did you ever point and click in any Infocom games?
Well, Infocom was all text.
Yeah, so that's also an adventure. It's a text based adventure, but it's still an adventure game. When we say adventure games, we're thinking about Sierra Online's adventures. And Infocom's King's adventures,
I think the only adventure game that I really enjoyed, if we're gonna limit it to that genre, is Manhunt. The Sierra Games Manhunt.
Wait, didn't you say you liked Police Quest?
I never really played Police Quest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Manhunt was good though.
Yeah, mine isn't even a question. It's Grim Fandango.
or Snatcher on the Sega CD was actually very, very good.
Snatcher?
I don't know if you ever played Snatcher. No. Snatcher was fantastic.
Oh, God. That just only reminds me of the Dana Plato game.
No. It's not like the Dana Plato game at all.
Death Trap? No, wait. Night Trap.
Yeah. No, it's not like Night Trap at all. It's Snatcher is basically a video game version of Blade Runner is what it was. Look it up. I think you'd be very.
That was an excellent adventure game, though. Blade Runner.
Look it up. I think you'll be very impressed with what you see about Snatcher.
It was done by
Konami, so it's a major game. It's a major release. Why Konami has not re-released it for any other console since the Sega CD, I don't know. That seems to be a stupid property to be sitting their hands on. There was a sequel to it called
Snap
Police Knots.
Okay.
Police Knots, I believe it was, which was only released in Japan. It was never even ported here, which seemed to me to be a gross error in judgment.
But both
Snatcher and Police Knots, fantastic games.
But you know that there was a Blade Runner adventure game, which actually took place during the events of the film, right? But it was not, you know, while Rick Decker was out there doing his thing, your character is doing something else. And it actually had the voices of Joe Turkle and Breon James in it as well. And basically, it was a randomized adventure game in which who was a human and who was a replicant were randomized. And you had multiple endings based on everything that happened in the game. So I always ended up getting the little girl killed, the little replicant girl killed. I always did. I could never avoid it. She always got offed.
Mm.
So, you know... But you should try. You should check out Blade Runner, or at least watch a Let's Play of it.
I have Blade Runner on the CD-ROM version of Blade Runner. Oh, okay. If that's the same game you're talking about, yeah.
It isn't considered one of my best. I mean, I also liked Full Throttle.
Yeah. You know, maybe we should do next week for the Gaming Flashback. Pull up Snatcher. That would be fantastic. Pull up Snatcher for. Snatcher.
Yes, I get how he spells Snatcher, but you said Snatcher.
Pull up Snatcher for next week's Gaming Flash.
Pull up Snatcher. Because when you said Pole Snatcher, I thought it was a porn game that you wanted to review.
No, that's completely different.
Oh, well. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy our feedback, so leave us some comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestooge.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments.
Yay, iTunes comments.
You know, this has been a short show. And
I sent you a link to my favorite Morgan Freeman clip, by the way.
Yes, I saw it. Yes. Yeah. This is a pretty short show. I don't think I should be doing this at 1 a.m. my time.
I could have gone earlier than 10 p.m. my time
I wasn't able to.
Oh, okay.
So
I am working from home because I can't leave the house. So, if you want to do it at a more reasonable hour for you, that's fine.
Okay. So anyways, we'll see you next week and there'll be more news. By the way, there was no clip show last week because I didn't even have time to do that.
No, can I just ask you about something, since we didn't have it on the agenda or anything, but I'm kind of curious to know what your opinion is over the whole Gary's incident that's going on right now.
Gary's incident? You mean like
you're not aware of Gary's incident? So what happened was, on Steam they released this game called Gary's Incident. It was reviewed by a YouTube person who named Total Biscuit, who does first impressions. He doesn't really review games. He just says, "Hey, here's a game," and I played it. He hated it. And the game producers, in retaliation, did a DMCA takedown on the YouTube video, got it removed, and basically were being jerks about this guy reviewing their game. He went public with the fact that they had it pulled from YouTube, and the whole thing blew up in a giant Streisand effect. So, if you look up Gary's Incident, if you look it up on YouTube, there are videos showing you the gameplay. It looks like it's a survival adventure game where you're playing crashes on an island and you have to survive, but it is so broken in several fundamental levels.
Don't care about first impressions though. I mean, if you're going to review a game, it's like basing a book based on its cover. You know, I really don't care about, you know, Ben Croshaw, AKA, you know, Zero Punctuation, actually, he tries to play all the game. I remember that he couldn't play all of Final Fantasy 13 because it was the same game over and over and over for hours. And he said, "Listen, if you're gonna..."
It's a straight corridor. Yeah.
Yeah. People have told me that it really changes in 30 hours. And my response is, why would it take fucking 30 hours for the game to get any good?
Yes, exactly. And that goes to an old statement that I've said, and I know you've heard me say this over and over and over again. If you have to qualify it, it's not a good game.
Okay. So anyways, we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Look up Gary's Incident, because it's actually hilarious what's going on right now. Seeing this game company discover the Streisand effect firsthand in real time is hilarious.
Nerd drama doesn't interest me at all.
It's funny.
Anyways, see you next week.
All right. See you next week.